the time when the oceans drank Atlantis, and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. And on to this, Conan, destined to bear the jeweled crown of Aquilonia upon a troubled brow.
Hello?
It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
It works. I gotta probably update Lib DVD CSS on our machine or something.
What are you trying to do, play DVD?
Yeah, she wants to play her Enterprise Season 3 DVDs.
Uh-huh.
Which is odd. Maybe that DVD player's going flaky.
Possibility.
You know what I like? Did you see what came on there when I popped that DVD in there? You had, like, the TriStar logo. Mm-hmm. Then you had commercials. Then you had previews. Then you had, like, FBI warning crap and MPAA warning crap. And then you finally got to, like, a pre-show thing and then the menu. And I hate that. And what's nice about the Linux players is you could blow past
right
all that.
Right.
But if I try and do that on the Mac, it will not let me do that. It tells me on, what is it, Mac's iDVD. So, no, you must watch the FBI warning.
You must watch everything, yeah.
I like to leave the FBI warnings to laugh.
Have to watch... Well, you know, if you run it through, like you said, through Linux, you don't have to do that. The M player, you can start it right up at the movie and not have to watch a damn thing other than that.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard when you're watching a thing with, like, three episodes on it.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, I actually watched Stargate Atlantis for the first time about a week and a half ago, and that's a pretty good show.
It's okay.
It is. It is a good show.
You know, I it's like last season I watched Battlestar Galactica, the final show of the season, and I thought this was really good. And then I TiVo'd all of the second season.
Right.
Except I missed all of them except for the final episode of the second season. I finally got to watch that. And I'm like, woo, that's pretty good, too.
I still have to watch that one.
Battlestar Galactica is the best sci-fi on TV right now. That's all I got to say.
I'll tell you one
hands
thing, man.
Down.
Have you guys seen some of the shows on the FX channel? I can't believe some of the stuff they put on those shows. Like Over There and Nip Tuck Man. It's like HBO Part 2, you know? That's what they're shooting for, kind of like that adult, racy kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, but you know, I don't really like that because they're trying to get the almost adult crowd in, you know, the 20-something crowd that thinks that the movie is a good movie because it has racy content, and I think a movie is a good movie because it's a good movie regardless of the racy content.
Yeah,
you know? So I'm not impressed by someone showing me a quick nipple or something like that anymore. Now, back when I was 18, yeah, a quick nipple. Hey, that was a nipple.
After Sipowicz showed
his butt, miles
that
for
was
that,
the end of it. You know, once Sipowicz did it, that was it.
Tonight we have Dan Dennity on the show.
Never.
And I'm barging over top of everything.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's because of the delay. It's got like a 2-second delay.
Silence.
No, I don't think I have too much of a delay. I only have a delay if I listen over the stream. Then I've got like a 40-second delay. But
you're not listening at the sort of stream at the same time you're listening on the Asterix, are you?
No, I popped it on earlier just to make sure we all weren't like blasting through. But
so you guys are dumping Firefox. I see you're all going to Opera.
No, I'm still staying. I just
I'm
wanted
just
to
looking
check
at
it out.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's a little different than what you might be used to.
I like it, but here's what I want, like, from all you listeners out there. Somebody has got to have time to check this out, because I just don't right at the moment. When you install Opera, okay, and I'm running Fluxbox, you install Opera and you start it up, it hijacks your entire freaking screen. How do you get the damn thing to start up, you know, in a partial screen size, you know, say like half your screen size or something? You know how any other browser, if you size the browser to where you want it and you close it down, you open it up again, it starts in the size that you put it to? Opera doesn't do that. You size the browser where you want it, you close it down, you start it up again, hijacks your whole freaking desktop. Other than that, I really like it. But that really bothers me. However, you know, there's a catch to that, and like the reason that I'm trying this out is because Firefox keeps blowing up on me. Now, if Opera doesn't ever blow up, then I can just leave the damn thing running, you know, leave the browser window running, and I don't ever have to start it up again. But on the off chance that I do have to shut it down and start it up again, I would like it not to hijack my entire desktop. And there you go.
Well, what are the special effects?
Huh?
And it says enable special effects.
I don't know.
Click and see what happens.
What are they?
I did, but I don't know what they are.
You gotta go to the right websites.
Show hidden toolbars while customizing.
Yeah. Enable special effects. Deleting file system. Starting now.
Remove partitions on hard drive.
That's nice.
Well, Link, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Yeah, I bet you. You know what? You know what's sad? I haven't even had a chance to listen to last week's show. I've been so freaking busy.
You know what I could do without on this damn browser?
What?
If I open up a new window, underneath the navigation bar, another, like, drop-down occurs, which has the home button, the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know whose top 10 that is. It must be mine. Bookmarks. I don't want that. I don't like that. How do I turn that off?
I don't know.
It's doing too much. Too much I don't like.
I don't know.
It's unfamiliar.
It'll block unwanted pop-ups. How about it blocks that unwanted navigation bar?
You should able to customize that, though.
What's the wand? Is that the wand? What is a wand?
I don't know what the
that
wand
mean?
Is either.
It's magic.
I got a magic wand for you, Pat.
That's where the magic happens.
It could be. Could be.
Oh.
It says wand, control, enter. Control, enter. All right.
Wait. New pages always. Remember last size.
I don't care, I guess.
This is stark. Listen to you guys. Just fumbling your way through.
Well, I could do it with the show window size. That's pretty cool. Smooth scrolling. Yeah, I like smooth scrolling. Open new page next time. Okay. All right.
Anyway, what spurred this on, like I said, is and there's been some comment to it in the forums, the tech show forums, is that some people, a couple people privately and in the forums have mentioned to me that they do not like Firefox, and I really like Firefox, right? It's a really nice browser. However, it does something that really pisses me off, and that is occasionally, you know, when I'm using it hard, or when I really need to be able to use it and not have it go down, it will simply shut down. And, like, that's the most annoying thing in the world, especially when you're using it for work. Like, if you're doing some web coding, PHP or what have you, or, you know, like I wrote a bunch of reports for work that run in PHP and MySQL. And I'll be running a report or something like that, trying to get some information. The thing will just bomb out and close down. I can't, like, you know, I can't put up with that. When I'm working, I work hard and fast. I want to get it done so I can get my ass out the door and go smoke a cigarette, right? You know?
Got to have your priorities, right?
Yeah, you got to have your priorities. I want to get the thing running, and while it's running, I want to go, you know, grab a cup of coffee and smoke and relax for a second before somebody else, you know, runs into me and wants to make my brain work. So I just can't stand, like, doing this whole thing where you're running something and the browser dies. That's crap to me. And I've been using it for so long and just, like, dealing with it. Restart the browser, start the thing over again, do the thing. And it just, like, occurred to me a few days ago, like, that's a Microsoft attitude, right? Like, just like Microsoft, you're running along doing your shit on your operating system, blam, it blows up, you got to reboot. I don't want to do that, you know?
You tell them.
It's a really shitty way to do things. I think that Although I believe that Firefox is a wonderful product, I think that they need to spend some quality time fixing a frickin' thing so that it doesn't blow up every 15 minutes on my computer. Now, to that end, I am investigating supporting in another browser. I have played with Mozilla a little bit. Mozilla suffers the same problem, blows up. Why does it suffer the same problem? Because, you know, Firefox and Mozilla are using the same engines.
Conqueror's pretty nice, man.
I've been trying. Conqueror is really nice.
It's been good.
Right? It's really nice. It's quite speedy, quite fast. If you start it up, like I do dumb things. Like I start it up from inside a terminal. You know what I mean? So you get all that error coding and all that, you know, all the standard out code flows to the terminal, which slows it down just a hair, just starting it up. Once it's going, it's fine. However, it just doesn't have, like, it works great. You know what I mean? It looks good, works great, renders well. Just does not have the same feel as Mozilla or Firefox or Netscape, which I've been using for eons and eons now. So that's something that would take a little getting used to. However, that's a good, you know, close third maybe. The one that I currently like quite well so far is Opera, okay, especially since they released it as a free product. That is really, really cool. Of course, you know, they pretty much had to do that anyway because they gave it out. I gave out codes for it, registration codes, not too far back, so that you could, you know, enable it and it would be a free without all the advertisement things. And then, you know, everybody was saving those codes and they were like exchanging them on the net and stuff like that. So they said, yeah, peasant, just release it as a free thing, which is really cool, and I like it a lot. Like I said, the only thing that I do not like that's irritating me right now is every time I open Opera up, it opens up full screen on my monitor.
That's Fluxbox. It's on.
Yeah, on Flux. To be honest, I haven't tried it on, like,
try this.
GNOME or...
Okay, now this isn't going to fix your full screen problem.
Okay.
But go up to View.
All right.
Go to Full Screen.
Full screen, yes.
Now hit escape. Does it bring it back to full screen or is it small?
It brings back to full screen.
Now go to full screen.
Same way?
Yeah, go back to full screen.
That's just F11, right?
I don't know. Hit escape again. Now did it shrink it down?
No.
No.
No, wait, are you still on full screen? Because when I go to view, when I go to full screen...
You're running on PVC, right?
Right. If I go to full screen, it extends it to full screen. I hit escape. It goes back to like it just opened up. But if I go back to view again, full screen, and hit escape, it goes down to a smaller size window.
No, it doesn't do that for me at all. No, it just...
I don't like my tabs above the navigation
bar.
Like
completely full screen, and then you hit again so it's not full screen, and it does the whole thing where it's still full screen, but it has the window decoration so that you can drag it around or whatnot. But it's still full screen.
Opera seems to render pretty well. All the
It looks pretty good, and it seemed fairly fast. I remember, you know, back in the day, I was checking out Opera. This is, well, boy, a long time ago. And I was using it for a while instead of Netscape. This is way before, like, Firefox ever came out. And I thought it was pretty good. However, I thought it loaded a little slow. And it doesn't seem to be having that problem anymore, boys and girls, let me tell you. It does what it's supposed to do.
It ain't doing what it's supposed to do for me.
What are you trying to do?
I just tried to load Dig, and it wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's unblocked or some shit like that?
No, I don't know. Wow, that took a long time
to
load.
Slow, that's what it is.
Depends on how many people are hitting your, you know, sucking up our bandwidth and stuff too, right?
Let me see what Firefox does.
But, all
right, everybody, get off the stream for a few minutes.
So we can test it. We're doing a little internal benchmarking kind of thing.
Alan, you still there?
I'm still here.
Dan, you still there?
Hello.
Dan here?
Yeah, there he is. Okay. Oh, there's Dig. Only an hour later.
It's just really slow.
I don't like... When you click on the type in an address, does it bring up that little bar down there? underneath the underneath. Like mine's doing this.
Yes.
I get this. I hate that.
That little drop down bar underneath the thing.
How can I turn that off?
There's got to be a way to turn it off.
You think?
I would think so, but I don't find that particularly annoying, actually.
I don't.
At least
like
not
that.
As annoying as you do.
Well, you guys have been playing with Opera. I've been playing with my cell phone and Bluetooth.
He's been playing with himself.
The cell phone.
I thought that was going to say.
Oh, it's a start bar, and you can turn that off.
There you go.
There, it's gone now.
And when I created a bunch of ringtones using just plain old MP3 files, I found a how-to. This guy wrote up about how to convert your MP3 files into a ringtone. It's pretty easy, man. You can use Audacity. It's just taking a 30-second clip, making it mono, and just re-encoding at a low bit rate. And the cell phone plays. Here's a sample.
We've heard this sample like 5 times already.
Now, are you using RIAA free music?
No.
Which is just made this broadcast non-RIAA compliant.
As long as you're on this,
compliant.
As long as
you've got less than 30 seconds.
30 seconds. You're okay.
Can anybody actually hear that?
I can.
I can sort of kind of almost hear.
And I got some cool graphics on there. It works pretty well, man. I could pull all the pictures and videos and everything off of it and push graphics on there and ringtones. And it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
I'm digging it. I wrote up on my blog about it a couple times. So if you got a Bluetooth phone, man, definitely check out the KDE Bluetooth framework and... Well, the newer kernels support it by default, Bluetooth. So,
now, do you have one of those little Bluetooth earbud things,
no,
too?
No, I don't.
You can...
No, they're expensive, those things. They're about $50.
I've had enough of Opera. Goodbye. Good day, sir.
Good day.
I will stay with Firefox.
But it's definitely a better option than paying $3 a piece for a ringtone for a song that you already own.
Yeah.
You know, the newer phones, most
what
of them play, most of them play MP3s. Some of the older phones you have to re-encode with a special cell phone codec. But there's tools available if you have to do that to re-encode it. Just got to look a little.
There's actually websites that will do that for you as well. I did that for my wife for her Sprint phone. Her Sprint phone, I gave her a ringtone for that one. And... You do the encoding, you set up the file yourself, then you send it to this website, and it sends it to the phone, and the phone realizes what it is on and sets the ringtone for you.
Well, this thing is good because...
It's actually pretty neat, although...
This thing, the KDE Bluetooth framework, it integrates nicely with Conqueror, so it's just drag and dropping files back and forth, and it's pretty easy once you get the connection established.
I thought you were going to do an episode of Twat on about this. When are you going to be doing it?
I sent Droops an email, and it looks like he put me on the active list, but he hasn't sent me back any responses or anything. So.
You're supposed to look at the calendar and record your episode.
Am I on there already?
I don't know. No, the calendar hasn't been updated.
For October?
Yeah.
I heard your episode. It sounded pretty good.
Is a
you were, like, just blasting through, man.
Yeah, I just...
It was, like, pretty quick.
Well, you know what? What I did was, it was 19 minutes long, too. I recorded off the Asterix machine using my...
sounded okay.
I used... first, I used my cordless phone, and it sounded like crap, and then I redid it with my cell phone, and it sounded all right.
Really? I was with the cell phone?
That was with my cell phone.
What about the client? Yeah, the light.
No, I wanted to try, like, the different way that people could do it. Using the extension that's set up that'll start and stop the recording. And then I just went through with
it
Audacity and cut out all the pauses.
And then go into the conference room?
Yeah, if you go in and you dial in the right extension, it'll transfer you to 80...
The conference room.
It'll transfer you to one of the conference rooms, and it'll start recording. And when you hang up, like if you have more people come in directly to that conference room,
uh-huh.
It'll record them too.
So it continues.
Yeah, it'll be continuous. And when you hang up...
Everybody hangs up.
It records to an in file and an out file. When you hang up, it merges the two files together. And then you go to the website and you can download it off the website and you can edit it and do whatever you want.
That's pretty good because people, you know, they don't have to come in, you know, software-wise. They can just pick up the phone and call in.
Right. You can
do
that. You can do that.
And the quality's decent.
See, it's not too bad. I don't know how I'm going to do my next one or when it's going to be. Because I can't tell due to the calendar. It's only up to this week. So.
Well, one of the episodes, was it Fizone? He was on it for about 10 minutes. And he was just completely rambling, man. He really didn't make much sense.
Well, is that about Pier?
Maybe.
PHP stuff?
I think so.
I enjoyed his. I liked that.
Was it, I don't know if it was him, but he was rambling quite a bit.
I enjoyed his. And because I'm interested in the PHP stuff. So, actually, I enjoyed all of them last week.
I like the cable one. The one Droops did. Talking about the Ethernet cable.
Yes.
That was good.
Now, I would love to go to Freaknik. Is that what it is? Yeah, Freaknik. That's coming up. But there's no way I'm going to be able to get down to Tennessee in the middle of October. We can't even make it to that Lytics thing in Ohio.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Let alone go down to Nashville.
The Ohio, what is it called? Ohio Linux Fest.
Saturday.
Is it Saturday
Columbus.
In Columbus? Do we have a link for that somewhere we can?
We posted it not too long ago.
Road trip?
It's in the.
I can't do
so
it.
I wish I could, man. I wish the hell I could, but I'm already previously committed back here in Pennsylvania on Sunday. And I think that would make a really sucky trip, considering I just did that, you know?
It's like, what, 10 hours?
Yeah, it's like 10 hours, and it, so, you know, you have 10 hours there and 10 hours
it's
back.
Pretty brutal.
That would really suck in a major way.
What I've noticed about the TWAT episodes is as the week went on, the audio quality got a lot better.
Episodes got shorter, though.
No, well, you know what? Jay Hood and everybody else, who was not Jay Hood?
There's one on the date. They went for about 15, 20
the
minutes.
One about the wireless. Lin and his group with the wireless,
right.
Which was really interesting. That was pretty long. Mine was about the same length as them. But it's supposed to be like 5 minutes or a little longer, 5 to 20 minutes.
Now, you want to revisit all of this, what you're talking about, because, you know, I've been out of the loop for a week and I have no freaking clue.
Today with a Techie. It's a daily podcast on hardcore tech stuff.
Okay.
This is the thing that we were talking about before that Droops
the twit
started doing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Twat.
And,
twat.
You know,
yeah, that's it.
Basically, you can do it, you know, yourself or record with a couple other people, and you upload it to the Twat FTP site,
mm-hmm.
and it gets put on the website. You're invited to do this, of course. They're expecting your email saying that you are going to do that.
Oh, well, apparently I lost all any information I might have had.
And apparently they want Alan, too.
Alan's got to do a CVS video camera.
So I already have my next one.
So where does one find the link for?
www.twatech.org. It's a good thing you didn't give my wife the $100. Right there. They work in my machine, so I'd probably have to look at what's going on your machine.
TWATTECH.com? Coke Slurpee. You're awesome, Aaron.
You got
I was just telling everybody on the air that you were awesome, too, but now that just confirms it, you know.
Thank you very much.
And she's employed now.
Yeah!
Hey, congratulations.
Lady of the night.
Okay, now what was it again? TWATTECH.
.org?
Huh? TWATECH.org.
TWATECH.org.
You and Connor have a good time.
You and Connor have a good time. Hey, there it is. Hey, I'm going to have to bookmark this. Somebody got to get this in the.
Put it in your Bashpotter bp.com file.
Yeah.
Or if you're tired of unreliable bash scripts.
This guy, I'm going to poke his eye out in a minute, man.
You got to get him on and bust his chops.
Unreliable
bash
scripts.
The guy who did
Penguin
TV, which is like a...
Yes.
Podcast catcher.
A podcatcher, whatever the hell they want to call
it. And he had a little description in there and linked it and like it.
Unreliable bash scripts, my ass.
But anyhow...
Hey, this is all cool, right. And this is just another podcast we can download, right?
Yeah, and they're short, and they're really informative, and they're really good. Props out to episode 6.
Good job, Dan.
Is that the Dan episode, yeah. That's really awesome.
But tonight we actually do have a fantastic guest. Really excited about this. Something, I think we've been waiting a long time to get this person on.
Yes.
And Pat, introduce our guest tonight.
We have Dan Dennedy from the Kino Project. Welcome, Dan.
Hey. Dan. Dan. Hello, Dan.
Dan fell asleep.
Dan?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I thought you fell asleep there.
Yeah, it's my, I think it's my beer. It's really strong.
What are you drinking?
It's 7.2% alcohol.
What is it?
And it's called Arrogant Bastard Ale. Did you hear that?
Sounds good.
Arrogant Bastard Ale.
We like Blithering Idiot ourselves.
It's from San Diego.
Welcome
beer.
To the show, Dan.
Thanks. I've been looking forward to it. I've been listening for quite a while. I think sometime spring, maybe winter.
That's cool.
And I feel like I've gotten to know all you guys.
We've been dying to talk
and
to
you. And you're still listening?
I'm sorry, what did you say? There's a delay in here. That's kind of weird.
We've been looking forward to talking to you as well.
He said we've been looking forward to talking to you as well.
Not Dan.
Okay, so where do we begin?
You're the main guy behind the Kino Project, correct?
Yes, that's right. It was started by this guy, Arnie Schiermacher, out of Germany, but he hasn't been too involved. He's just mostly been, for the last few years, been kind of like the project sponsor, providing the web hosting. So it's been mostly myself and a partner. His name is Charlie Yates. And working on Kino Project has also involved a lot of other projects and led into some new developments. So it's pretty interesting. It's been kind of a test bed, I would say, for a lot of the other projects and for development of my coding skills and my knowledge of the tool set. So it's been actually more of an experiment. I like to tell people that, you know, what they've seen so far is just practice. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Now, did you write the FireWire interface as well?
The FireWire interface. Well, it depends on what you mean by that. Let's go back to how it started and how I got started. I wasn't too much of a Linux user in the 90s, but I decided to get into it in about 1999, 2000. And I had a DV camera. I was very much interested in DV and multimedia. And so I wanted to explore the multimedia opportunities or capabilities of Linux. So the first thing I tried to do was capture video off this camera, and it wasn't working. But there was this program called DVGrab that was supposed to work. So I got involved in the Linux 1394 project initially by trying to help debug what broke inside the kernel that would not allow it to capture anymore. And so I traced it down through doing CVS checkouts and diffs to a specific check-in, and then this other guy found the exact bug. And then we got DVGrab working, and that was ever raw 1394, and that's the way it is this time. And then I did help. I collaborated with another guy named Dan Moss on the DV1394 driver. He wrote the transmission side, and I wrote the reception side of that driver. And now that driver is going to be deprecated soon, and actually removed soon. And now there's a third generation, which is also based upon RAW 1394, but it's a newer model. It takes things that we learned in DV1394. Dan Moss actually implemented the stuff in the kernel, and I implemented a lot of the stuff along with a couple other developers on top in what's called IEC 61883. Got that? So
we're up to the third generation on that. So, yeah, there is a lot of FireWire interfacing besides just the media I.O. There's device detection and control, which occurs through a library called libAVC1394. So, I'm the maintainer of libAVC1394, libIEC61883, as well as the newer versions of libRAW1394. And then I just do a little bit in the kernel, not a whole lot.
Now, currently you're at version 0.76, right? That's the current stable version.
Yeah, that's right. And development has been pretty slow lately, but I do have a 0.80 in the wings. It's not a lot of new features. I'm trying to basically keep it where it is, and I'm just going to do some optimizations on what we have. Because we want to start over and do something a little different, so in our approach. So the 0.8 that I have, and it's not checked in yet, but I just got it ready to over the weekend, and it drops all GNOME dependencies. It's just GTK, and I've made some other changes to make some things more consistent as far as how you select files in different areas of the application.
Do you plan on having...
That's where that is. And I'm also... there's a couple plug-in packages that I'm maintaining now as well. They're called DVTitler and TimFX. And I got those updated to work with this new version that's GTK only. And I plan on just bundling those in with the next release. So... TimFX used to require GTKMM, the C++ bindings, and it required an OpenGL, and we're trying to reduce dependencies, make it easier to build for people. So I've reworked a little bit of TimFX, so you'll get in the next package fewer dependencies and more effects and some.
Do you plan on supporting export to Theora format in the near future?
It does do that.
Oh, it does, because I was
if
just
you download up. This. Yeah, if you download this binary called FFmpeg to Theora.
Right.
Then one of the export scripts that is in 0.75 and later, I believe. Yeah, that's right. Maybe even 7.4 and later. But, yeah, it will detect if that binary is installed in the path and enable that functionality. That's a really good way to go as far as uploading video on the net, especially because Fluendo, you know the Fluendo guys?
I'm not familiar with
it. Never heard of it.
No.
Okay, they're the... a bunch of GStreamer developers have commercialized and have been working on a streaming server as well as a video editor, all based upon the GStreamer framework.
Is this going into PDV?
One of the cool things... Yeah, that's right. PDV, okay. They've hired the PDV developer, Edward Hervé, I think his name
okay.
is. And, but they've also created this really cool Java applet called Cortado, and you can put it in a web page and it'll play back your... Theora files, you know. So that's probably, I think that's very significant. You know, posting web on the net has always been a real problem. I mean, posting video on the web has always been a real problem with compatibility and people having codecs installed. And Flash video actually is very easy to do as well, and that is a nice way to go as well. But Theora with the Cortado Java applet is really good. So, because, you know, not only is it very easy for browsers, any browser that has Java installed can play it, but, you know, it's playing with these patent-free standards as well.
Now, where did you say the Theora export was? Because I'm looking at it right now.
So binary that you need installed is called FFmpeg to Theora.
See, I have that.
You're running Ubuntu, right?
Okay.
Right. But I'm looking here at the export on Kino, and I don't see an option.
Did you go to export DB? Did you go to export DB pipe?
There it is.
And then look in that pull down.
FFmpeg DivX VCD single pass DivX using MEM encoder, dual pass video. Does FFmpeg or to Theora need to be in a certain place?
So it's not showing up.
No.
He's running 0.75.
What you should do is you should run Kino from a terminal window, and it'll display a bunch of messages when it starts up, and it should, it might explain, not necessarily it will, but it might explain why it did not, you know, what kind of problem it ran into trying to detect FFmpeg to Theora.
Yeah, I don't have it
but,
in my,
you know,
in,
it should
in my,
be working.
Yeah, I don't have it in my pack.
You know,
that might be the reason.
Oh, that's the problem. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, Charlie implemented this DV pipe, export DV pipe, and that was really cool because it's very extensible, it's scriptable, you know, using bash scripts or whatnot. So, yeah, we've been able to add lots of export features through that.
I was using it over the weekend. I was editing some videos of my son, and it worked pretty well. The you know, importing in over the firewire works great. I was doing the editing, the trimming. That worked fine. I started doing some transitions, and most of the transitions worked, but a couple of them, when you started to do it, it would bomb out. It happened a couple times on me. The main.
You mean it actually segfaulted?
Yeah, yeah. Like the
wow.
The one that I use the most is like the fade, and that worked fine. Also, the pushbox worked okay, and the barn door worked okay. It was one of the other ones. I think it was the OpenGL one, and I forget one of the other ones.
Okay. Well, yeah, we've tried. Well, I've tried really hard to make it stable. You know, and that's always a work in progress.
The other thing is, you know,
it's a lot more stable than Citalera.
You're dealing with packages, you know. It's only as good as the package maintainers put it together, you know.
Yeah, I suppose that could be it. You know, I'm always building it from source.
Maybe that's what I should do.
Now, Dan.
Yes.
Kino, Cinelera, the upcoming PityV, or whatever PityV is going to morph into, you just talked about, main actor. Those are about really the only options. Oh, I think there's also a Linux Video Studio, which I've never gotten to work properly.
There's also a Java one, too.
Okay, let me tell you about some more options. Yeah, Joshaka. What's interesting about Joshaka FX is that Charlie Yates, my development partner on Kino, we went on to develop a couple other projects that we were contracted out for, and one of those is called MLT, which actually stands for Mutton Lettuce Tomato from the Princess Bride movie, and this is our new subsystem that we're going to be building our future apps on, and he is actually in a contract engagement right now with the Joshaka FX team, building editing capabilities within Joshaka FX using MLT underneath. Now there are some other Linux video editors besides one of the newcomers that you mentioned, PTV. Now another newcomer is Diva, and that runs on Mono and uses GStreamer. So I don't know if the code for that has been posted yet. It was one of these Google Summer of Code projects, and it looks real promising. I mean, the guy who develops it has been blogging about it and posting screenshots and some screen cam movies, and it looks pretty good. You know, I'm a little wary of using Mono and GStreamer as a foundation myself. I have considered it, but and had ruled it out, at least in the near term. So this looks interesting. And also, there's some other commercial projects. Like there's this one called Discrete Smoke, and it's like $50,000. So.
Yeah. I'll just remortgage my house for that.
I guess that's for a professional TV station or studio.
Yeah, that's for, like, film-level work, yeah. You know, there is a big gap in Linux video editors. There, you have on the lower end things like Kino and PTV and Diva and Linux Video Studio. And then you have these higher-end things like Smoke, Cinelera, and I think, you know, PTV and Diva are going to aim for the middle of the road, and whatever I work on next after Kino, as we know it, Kino 1.0, you know, will be a medium-level tool, kind of like the Main Actor. The Main Actor is pretty cool. In fact, I'll give another plug out for my buddy Charlie. He wrote the DV Capture module that's in Main Actor for Linux. So Main Concept contracted him for the development of that. They didn't want me. I burned a bridge with them.
That goes for what? $199, I think they sell it for Main Actor?
It's like $299 now, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Expensive. Yeah.
It's not cheap at all.
How'd you burn a bridge?
They had a job posting, this was about 2002, for a Linux developer, and I responded to it, and then the president said he wanted to do just something on a contract basis to get started with, because they were small and they weren't sure, and I guess he wanted to try me, you know, test me out. And so he hooked me up with a developer to get started, and I was going to be paid monthly. And they gave me some code, but they never gave me the complete code so I could build it, you know. So it was a pretty terrible mess. And then some of the code that was in it, some of the classes for like AVI and this frame object or frame class were based upon code out of dvgrab. And I called the developer on it because it's GPL, you know.
Right.
And he said that he was planning to remove it. And then I went silent for about a year and a half about it, and then something came up, I forget, on a mailing list. And I kind of made a tongue-in-cheek remark about Main Concept violating GPL. and that inflamed the president pretty well of Main Concept. And apparently, and then that got the original author of those classes, Arne Schiermacher, got him back involved in the discussion. And apparently they had come to some kind of agreement where Main Concept had shared some specifications with him in exchange for being able to use this code. But it was done over the phone, and Arne didn't recall it all. I don't know. But it just sort of went away.
Whoops.
And then more recently, I had on the MLT project another opportunity to work with them where we were using their codec SDKs. So, and I'm working with them again in my new job.
That's good.
Let me go back just a couple of steps. You were talking about GStreamer. You said you really didn't want to go that route. Any particular reason why?
GStreamer got started around the same time as Kino, and actually the developer of the DV codec that we use, LibDV, started GStreamer. So I was very, very much interested in GStreamer from the outset and followed it for a little while, but it was always difficult to keep up with it. It always required these bleeding-edge versions of the auto tools and various libraries and codecs, and so it was always a pain. And then it took quite a few years just for them to be able to get audio playback stabilized. And even in the latest stable versions, video seeking is not very good, and it hangs and crashes a lot. I mean, as far as if you look at available applications for it, there was been quite a few audio applications developed for it, but there's really only one video application built on top of it that is in common use, and that is Totem. And that's been rather recent in the last year. And it's fair. I tended to prefer Totem with the Zine back end. But GStreamer is getting better, but I think it's suffering a little bit from a complexity issue. But it appears they may be turning a corner here and being able to tame a bit of this complexity and stabilizing and having video seeking working very stably. Because in video editing, you need to be able to jump to any frame at a moment's notice. So, there is kind of a tenet of software engineering, and that is when software becomes a certain level of complexity, then it's just too difficult to get stabilized. It's like you make something too top-heavy, and that's been a concern of mine with GStreamer.
I had some girlfriends like
so
that.
So we had a pro... I'm sorry?
So I had some girlfriends like that. Too top-heavy, you know?
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
You got to learn to embrace it.
Not at all.
You got to learn to embrace it, yeah.
So, Charlie and I were contracted to develop a video server for an Indian satellite TV broadcaster. And we had to figure out, it had to be something that could do real-time effects and handle different types of video inputs. And, you know, we weighed a lot of options, and we, Charlie took the lead on that project and decided he wanted to build something his own. And that became what's called MLT. That's on SourceForge. Again, that's mutton, lettuce, tomato, you know, .sourceforge.net. And we were pretty pleased with the results we got in just 5 months of work that we had to do to complete that deadline, and realized that, wow, we could use this as a foundation for, you know, a new version of Kino or something else that we want to do. And then Charlie then was contracted to develop a Shotcut, which is an very specialized video editor built on top of MLT. It's specialized for this company and for a news environment, so it's not exactly user-friendly. And now he's working on Joshaka effects. And MLT is not intended to be something as broad and comprehensive and flexible as GStreamer. I have to hand it to GStreamer as far as architecture and design goes, it has very ambitious goals, and you know, one day when it will be working, it will be great. It is working, but I mean, maybe working supremely.
So, MLT and Kino, when do you foresee the merging of those two projects? Is that like about a year or so off, or? We looking at soon?
Well, that's hard to say. I've actually started doing a little integration in this upcoming 0.80 release, because I wanted to drop the GNOME dependencies, and one of the GNOME dependencies was on, what is it? Not gconf, but the predecessor, gnomeconf. And that's basically kind of like an any file, you know? Parser and serializer. So we have something similar in MLT called properties, and so I pulled that in to replace that functionality. So it's not adding a dependency right now because I've just copied the code over. And it's really, that kind of integration is really just intended to be a crutch. I've been weighing options a lot over the last year as far as what I want to do with Kino 2. I'm leaning a little bit more towards Qt in KDE rather than GTK. Also, looking at some language choices, considering doing some stuff in Ruby. Also looked at C-sharp and Mono because for a while I was doing, as a day job, some work in C-sharp on Microsoft.net. So, it's still, that's still a little bit up in the air. And I like to I like to tell people that I enjoy this so much that I could do it for the rest of my life. So we'll see.
It's improved. I mean,
no time frame.
I like the fact that you have the export utilities. The last couple of releases, you've added quite a bit.
Yeah.
You can code to a DVD format, an MPEG-2 format, or you can go to a video CD.
Yep.
That's good that everything is
one
there.
Of the things that I'm. One of the things that I'm looking forward to in probably the immediately the release after the next is an import utility. So part of my current job, I've been learning a lot about writing various scripts in order to coerce various media files into a standardized format, you know. So I have a script that I use called NE2DV. And it uses a combination of MPlayer and FFmpeg. And you can convert just about anything into DV. And it maintains the aspect ratio properly and so forth. That could be achieved a little bit to some degree with MLT, but it would take some more work, and MLT is kind of a bigger hammer for that. But most people already have, who are working at least with Kino, probably already have MNCoder and FFmpeg. You can do a lot of converting to DV right now just using FFmpeg. But there's still a lot of formats and codecs that MPlayer handles, and FFmpeg will not be able to properly scale your input video, add any black bars, because DV has these fixed resolutions and while maintaining the aspect ratio. And MPlayer can do that. So that's really cool. So I'm looking to build a very simple... instead of a DV export DV pipe, it'll be like an import DV pipe, and it'll take a script, and you can write a script that will use MPlayer or FFmpeg or some combination thereof, or even something like GStreamer. And as long as it outputs raw DV, then it will consume it.
What do you use to take your videos after you've edited them and burnt to DVD? Do you use command line, or do you have a graphical tool that you use?
For the DVD authoring?
Yeah.
I don't do a whole lot of DVD authoring. And to be honest, I don't do enough video editing either. I do a fair amount, enough to keep myself in check. But I made a New Year's resolution at the beginning of the year at the local Linux user group. We were going around making New Year's resolutions. And I said, mine is to edit more video. Because I end up, you know, coding so much more than actually editing. I tend to just use what's built into Kino and just export a DVD video directory that does not have menus. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So there's like a DV pipe export script that I made that uses FFmpeg and MPlex and DVD author, and you can just go straight from, you know, the Kino project right out, and it'll make a whole DVD video directory without any menus, but with chapter points. And then you can use something like K3B to burn it to DVD, or you can just use Grow ISOFS. As far as a GUI goes for menu authoring and stuff, I hear DVD Styler is pretty cool, but I've used this Java application, actually. That's pretty interesting. It's called Varsha. Have you heard of this?
Vaguely.
No.
Okay, it's V as in Victor, A-R-S-H-A.
Like Marsha with a V.
Varsha, Varsha, yeah. Varsha.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, that's on SourceForge. And a keynote user that used to come on the IRC channel, mailing list quite a bit, and he would chat with us. He ended up making this Java application. So, unfortunately, I don't know of a tool. You know the DBD author XML format?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, it would be awesome if there was a tool that would use that as its project file format. Because in more ways than one, Keynote can output an MPEG with DVD author XML. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so it would be great if there was another tool that would just open that up, you know, because then you'd already have your DV title with its chapter point set, and then you could just add the menus. But that hasn't, I'm not aware of that's been done yet. I have asked some people who have been very interested and have contributed a little bit in the DVD output side for some enhanced DVD authoring functionality, you know, some canned menu kind of functionality. So you could use the metadata functionality of the Keynote storyboard, and maybe that would tag a particular frame as the thumbnail for that scene, and then use that as the menu button. But that really hasn't gone much where.
That'd be a great idea.
Yeah. There's a lot that can go with that. But I've kind of, at first, for many years while working on Keynote, I was kind of bullish on DVD video and kind of down negative about web video. And my tune has changed a little bit recently, at least with the advent of things like podcasting and video blogging, and as well with my new job, which is TV for mobile phones.
You just relocated, right? You're originally from Ohio, right?
Yeah. I just relocated from Cincinnati to the San Francisco Bay Area.
That's a big switch.
And, yeah, it's real nice. And the weather's awesome. And, you know, the job's going great.
Is the cost of living higher out there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, you better believe it. I mean, I had a mortgage in Cincinnati, and I'm renting a house here, and it's double my mortgage. So,
wow.
But, you know, you get a salary adjustment. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it unless there was a salary adjustment. So, I had some hard times in the previous couple years, and I went to almost 50% of the salary that I had in 2000 and 2001. And so you learn how much less you can live on, you know, how much you can survive on. So we've downscaled our lifestyle a little bit.
Got to do what you got to do, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Dan, since we started doing this show, since episode one, the one thing that we have always said what we wanted to be able to do was edit videos easily in Linux. From, you know, I remember, what was it, going on 8 or 9 years ago when I was using that other operating system called Windows, I was able to edit videos, pull them in off of my TV tuner card through my dad's old camcorder, and it wasn't the best, but at least it did the job. And it's taken like 8 years, it seems, to get to that point in Linux that finally, I mean, Keynote has been one of the the applications have really, you know, started to tackle that deficit in Linux. And man, why is it taking so long? I mean, is it just that there hasn't been interest, or is it that there's not enough people qualified in doing that?
Well, as for why, if you want a simple answer, I would say that there's not enough energy being put into it. There's not enough developers. So, at least in this space. When I got started with it, there was a when I got started in like late 2000 with Linux multimedia, one of the things that I first looked for was how can we display video quickly, because just doing RGB draws in the X server isn't very fast. And just at that time, this video X 386 extension called XVideo had become available. And so that was just, what, that was about 5 years ago that became available. And actually, you know, FireWire has been available since like about 1996. And then outside of Linux 1394, then you have like Video for Linux and all of the sync issues that people suffered for a while, because you had video coming in off of Video for Linux and audio coming in through an audio card, and they have different clock references. And so, so as far as why, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of focus, I would say, until the new millennium on the Linux desktop and especially with multimedia. And then, you know, there's just been not a whole lot of developers. I have tried to make Kino simple. I got interested in it because I was basically a beginner with C and C++. I had a little bit in college in the first half of the 90s of C and C++. But in the last half of the 90s, I did web application development, and I didn't really use those skills. And I got a little worried. I was worried about my skills becoming too soft, and so that's one of the reasons why I got involved with Linux. I had tried some C++ development on Windows and didn't like it. It was like a blight. And so I started getting involved in Linux, and so I had to start from ground zero, basically. I didn't know Linux well. I didn't know the GNU toolkit well for development, and my C and C++ was very, very rusty, especially C++. I didn't basically didn't have any of that in college, and at that time, there was Broadcast 2000 video editor available. You know, that was prior to Cinelera. It was its predecessor.
Right.
You familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was... I was interested in working on that when I first got involved, but then it was just too much. It was too big of a nut to crack at the time. So Kino came out. Arnie, he had DB Grab, and he's like, posted on the Linux 1394 mailing list. He's like, hey, I threw this quickie GTK interface over DB Grab in this DB player that I have called XDB player or whatever, and added some VI key bindings, and so I took it from there and got involved, because that was a nice entry level for me. And so I've tried really hard to address ease of use, including adding hot plug support to the kernel modules. So when you plug in a camera, the appropriate kernel modules automatically load, stuff like that.
That's a big issue. Like, I have Canonix running on my main desktop, and it's basically Debian unstable.
Canonix?
Yeah, it's basically Debian unstable.
Yeah.
And by default, it has all the FireWire modules in there. You just got to do a mod prompt for them. You still have to do a mod prompt for them.
Are you on kernel 2.6?
2.6.12.
Are you on kernel 2.6?
Yeah.
2.6.12?
Yeah.
See, okay. Here's state of that. With Kernel 2.6, there was so many changes, and then the lead developer on Linux 13.94 made a lot of changes as well. He took the opportunity to do some reorganization because the kernel was changing so much. And hot plugging, auto-loading of the appropriate kernel modules is something that got left by the wayside. Now, I got back involved, I got back on track with that, and fixed that up, and it should be working appropriately in 2.6.12. If it's not, then
it works fine.
I don't know what to say.
Once you do a mod probe and you fire up Kino, everything's working perfect. It works like
that. Oh, okay. You have to mod probe OHCI
1394? Yep.
What are you whoring for?
Yeah, there is something you can add to, I think it's modprobe.conf. That will automatically load OHCI 1394. Now, once that's loaded, then the protocol drivers that sit atop that should automatically load. But that's only with kernel 2.6.12 and onward.
So all you need is OHCI?
Yeah, that's right.
You don't need the raw 1394? You don't need to load up the raw 1394 as well?
You should not need to on kernel 2.6.12. As long as you load OHCI 1394. And I think if you alias in your modprobe.com, if you alias, I think it's called FireWire Controller or IEEE 1394 Controller to OHCI 1394, because that's at a lower level. That's kind of like the PCI level hot plugging, you know. Now, once OHCI kernel module is loaded, then it can actually talk on the bus. And then you have bus level hot plug or auto loading, if you will. And then actually being able to get it to set up the correct device files, you know, under /dev, you know, that's another story. Because then we had to switch from, I had to add it to DevFS support in kernel 2.4. And then in kernel 2.6 now, we had to switch and add support in SysFS so that UDEV can work. And when in early versions of the kernel 2.6, there wasn't enough information from the 1394 subsystem exposed through SysFS in order to be able to set up the device file entries. And that's another thing that's in the kernel 2.6.12.
So basically,
so if you're running UDEV,
it's like hitting a moving target, basically.
Yeah, you know, it's fun like that in development on Linux. You know, everything's moving all around. You know, with Kino, there's a few legacy issues that I need to address before a 1.0 release. I need to get off of OSS and get on ALSA for SAS.
Bite your tongue.
How about if I just use SDL, and then you can use whatever you want, because in SDL you can set an environment variable to control whether you want OSS or ALSA or ARTSD or ESD.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait for KDE to stop using the ART server. I'm looking forward to that day.
Yeah, that's become a number one fact item, I think. In the last year, a lot of Kino users on the forum have been getting hung up on the fact that ARTSD is interfering with Kino playback.
It interferes with a lot of things, actually.
Interferes with playing back MP3s under XMMS, you know.
Scott.
Yeah. That's still one of the big sore spots in Linux desktop.
What's that, audio? Audio servers?
Yeah, the audio servers and having something there that will mix audio from different sources. And
that's called Jack.
Do it over the network transparently.
Jack.
Yeah, I love Jack. And, we have a little bit of Jack support in MLT. So I should work on that some more.
It must be a pain to have to support all those different sound servers and, you know, audio, you know, getting all that to actually function properly.
Well, it is. So I don't. We just use OSS. Unfortunately. I don't know. MLT, we use SDL for all the audio and video output, at least for desktop. We support some other audio video outputs, including this high-end SDI card called a Bluefish 444. So what else is on your mind?
Let me ask you.
You want to chat about some other... What's that?
What I want to know is what do you use as your main development platform? What distro are you using? What kind of hardware do you use?
Ah, okay. You want to do a little geek shop talk, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, for the longest time, I was a GNOME user, more often on Debian and then Mandrake a little bit. But more recently, I've been using Arch Linux and KDE. So my main workstation, which is a dual Athlon system, it runs Arch Linux. And I actually have KDE, GNOME, and XFCE installed, 4.2. And the thing that I love about Arch Linux is it's very easy for me to do rolling upgrades and stay on the cutting edge. So I try not to be too bleeding edge because I don't want to be adding really new dependencies, you know, in Kino and making it difficult for users. Now, on my wife's and my stepson's machine, they run Arch Linux as well, and they use the XFCE environment. Because I can set that up to be very, very simple. And these are lower-end machines, and it runs pretty fast. And then on my work notebook, I run Mandrake 10.1. And I installed that pretty much because I didn't want to spend a lot of time futzing with it, and I knew it had a pretty good chance of supporting nearly all of the features in that notebook, including the wireless without a whole lot of effort. So,
let me ask you, as a coder, a developer, what tool sets does somebody need to learn to get into, you know, audio video application development? What do you recommend? What direction to go in?
Learn Mono.
Well, there's a lot of very interesting development going on in Mono, but it's kind of like its own faction, you know what I mean? It has its own set of developers, and it's kind of, I think, a little splintering and so supported by Novell. It looks like they're feeling the need to develop a whole bunch of applications on top of Mono that replicate existing applications, or not necessarily replicate, but there's a lot of overlap in functionality, you know. As far as toolkit and libraries to understand, it depends upon which direction you want to go in. I would say you want to pick like a GUI toolkit, GTK or Qt, or even the Enlightenment stuff, in the Enlightenment Foundation libraries. There's some very interesting stuff going on with Enlightenment's canvas called Avis. You know, it's very performant and has a lot of functionality. That's one of the things that I've been looking towards where I want to go with next, because I want to do a lot more with interactive functionality in the video window. In other words, when you're doing your DV title, you know, when you're typing and you're titling, I want to be able to just, you know, click on the video window area where you want the title to appear and start typing right over the top of it. And being able to drag and select out different shapes, you know, you want to put a video inside of another video, you know, drag out a rectangle and set the target for that, you know, what video is going to run inside that rectangle, and then be able to drag the rectangle around to animate it. And so I'm thinking there's some pretty sophisticated canvas functionality needed there. And that's one of the, I think, one of the weaker areas of the GTK and GNOME toolkit is the canvas. And it's an area that's in a major flux, and because there's Cairo being introduced, so development on libgnome canvas is pretty much halted, and unless it's been picked up recently and being the API ported to use Cairo, I don't know. But what you have now is you have a whole dump bunch of different canvases in each application, like Inkscape / SodiPoti has their own canvas, and Dia has its own canvas, and then you have the standard libgnome canvas. So Qt4 is supposed to have a really awesome canvas, and then there's Avis with what is it called? Evolution?
For
Enlightenment, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're actually speaking
for that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Enlightenment. Yeah.
Then you need to choose a multimedia subsystem and that you want to work with. And, well, you know, what can I say there? There's, like, a few different ways to go. There is GStreamer. That's, like, the most obvious choice for most people. There's also something called NMM, Network Multimedia. And then there's roll your own kind of stuff. And there's other things like MLT that are more fringe. And KDE's taken the approach of, at least for light desktop usage, you know, play sound file now kind of thing, they're building a very light abstraction layer over multimedia subsystems. So that might be something to look into. But, you know, people can check out MLT. There's some pretty cool stuff that you can do on there.
But the underlying technology behind it is C++. That's the language to learn.
In MLT, it's all based upon C. There are C++ bindings, and then there are also scripting bindings available for that. GStreamer is all C. And then you have Mono bindings for that. There's Python bindings as well. And for NMM, it's C++. C++ is okay. I've been not entirely pleased with it. I don't like keeping track of whether a variable is an object, a reference, or a pointer. And having to look that up all the time. So. Another language is like it's always a reference. So you have less to think about, less to keep track of in your head.
So it's the way you describe it, it sounds like there's all these different toolkits that everybody's using and kind of doing their own thing. What do you think, what needs to happen for people to get united behind one application? Does it have to be one application comes out and everybody sees the value in it to get behind it?
That's an interesting question. There has to be a little bit of goodwill on each of the developers' parts. Like, for instance, the developer of this Mono-based Diva video editor on his blog posted, you know, video editing on Linux sucks, unlike other things, blah, blah, blah. And other was hyperlinked to Kino. When you put it in that kind of, he's talking smack, you know. And when you put it in that kind of context where you're hyperlinking and you're pointing out another application, you know, that's not cool. I gave him a little flame about, you know, he's a new developer, I would say, on the scene, and it's not good to come out and pissing on other developers.
Is he a young guy?
I have pretty tough skin. I'm not pissed off, but I just think it's a pretty crummy thing to do, and it makes me a little wary of working with that developer. Cinelera has, a really good CAD, or maybe a really good chance at becoming this thing that people could get united behind, but the developer of it it's not really a community member, He doesn't communicate with the users and with other developers. It's just his own thing.
Is that why the interface is so bad?
And kind of.
I look at that
and
interface.
He uses his own toolkit, and that's another thing that I think discourages other developers. Although there is a pretty decent new, when I say new, I would say within the last year and a half, development community around Cinelera, under the Cinelera.org domain name. PTV has a pretty good chance of going somewhere if it can demonstrate some real utility and stability. And, it's great that the lead developer of that tool has this opportunity where he's getting paid full-time to work on that. So there's some real promise there. And I've been using Python a lot in my day job now. And there's a possibility I may try to work on that with him instead of working on, like, a Keynote tool. So I would say things may be looking up in the near future as GStreamer is maturing and starting to deliver on its promises.
GStreamer for everybody.
Something like a Python-based. I'm sorry?
GStreamer for everybody.
Well, that's the hope, it's the great white hope. So we're still waiting a little bit.
I appreciate the fact, Dan, that you've gone out and you've coded an application that was very lacking before you came on the scene. You've done great work, and I appreciate your efforts.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, great, thanks.
Now, if you'd only merged with the Canonics
it was
guy,
developed.
Pat would marry you.
It was I built Keynote to a lot of it was done to flex the libraries and the FireWire stuff that I was developing underneath, and it became a labor of love after a while, and just kept trying to improve it, but it's kind of reached a point now where the code base that it's based upon is too brittle, and it really needed to be rewritten. And so we have a new base now with MLT, and that MLT foundation has been getting extended now because Charlie's been developing editors on top of it and editing specific oriented functions to MLT. So it really needs a very easy to use and powerful interface slapped on top of it. So, it's something. What I can say about MLT is it's a thing that is in production use 24/7, and a broadcast environment with India's largest satellite TV broadcaster. So that's really saying something, I think.
Oh, great job.
We'll have to talk in the future, Dan.
Yeah, we'll have to start using it so we can broadcast our TV.
Yeah.
It's not really, it doesn't have a whole lot of consumer functionality. So.
That's okay, we're used to that.
Unfortunately.
So what else is going on? Let's see, I listen to the show a lot.
That's cool.
So I want to comment a little bit about some of the things that you guys have talked about recently.
You go ahead, but we gotta
drop
off of Ben Rev in just a minute. So, please go ahead.
Keep going. Keep going, because this is the bonus audio material right here.
Pull the plug out.
Let me
out.
Put a plug out. A few episodes ago, you were talking about portable audio players and iAudio things.
Yes.
iAudio brand?
Yep.
Yeah. So I got the iAudio 5X5L. You familiar with that model?
Is that the 1 gig version?
No, it's the newest version. It's a 30 gig hard drive.
Wow.
And this one actually has the extended battery life, 30 minutes. I mean, 30 hours. That would suck, 30 minutes. 30-hour battery life. Well, not only that, and it's super stable. I had this Rio Karma before that, and what's really cool about it is both of those is they played Og Forbis. But the Rio Karma was a flaky piece of shit. And I should have heeded the warnings on all the review sites.
Mm-hmm.
The hard drive seized on it. So I had to drive across country to move here. And so I got this iAudio. And it is awesome. And it is super solid. And not only that, it plays videos as well.
That's cool.
It plays MPEG-4 AVIs. Yeah. So you can take your Bash Potter script or your bashdp.conf and add video blogs into it and pull, both audio and video down. And,
mm-hmm.
and well, I have a script that I wrote that uses MPlayer and FFmpeg that called Any2iAudio, and it coerces conforms all the videos that it downloads into something that's compatible for the iAudio X5.
So you're watching all those video shows now then, huh?
Yeah. I'm really glad that you tuned me into some of the tech video shows. I've been getting... Have you heard of Rocket Boom?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been getting that and some other, personal video blog kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the other things like System and Dignation and stuff like that are pretty cool, too. I didn't know about those.
Hack.5, that's one of my favorite ones right there.
Hack.5,
yep.
Infonomicon TV.
Yep, Infonomicon TV. There's another one.
Teshow, T-E-H.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one yet. Is that pretty good? Teshow?
We had a post on our forum about the different video shows.
I have bad news about my iRiver.
Let's hear what happened to the iRiver.
My iRiver play button is it's going into the toilet.
You wore it out.
I don't know. I got to really push down hard on it and angle it for some reason. I tried taking it apart to see if maybe I can clean it. But
now we know why it didn't work, right?
No, this is before I finally got to the point. But you get down to that point, all you have is a little button into a solid-state device. You really can't go any further. But, yeah, it's like I got to, squeeze it.
I thought you were going to say you sat on it or something.
No, I didn't sit on it.
I figured it was going into the toilet from one of his kids or something like that. Hey, Dad, look, and I was listening to music in the bathtub.
Maybe got rained on a few too many times, and too much sweat.
Did they ever fix the Og playback capability on the iRiver?
No, I don't think they're going to either.
In the new, I thought the new iRivers were supposed to do that a lot better.
I don't know.
They got some really cool new ones coming.
The iAudio plays like a champ, man.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If I'm going to get a new one, I'll probably go with the iAudio because you recommend it and Dan recommends it.
Yeah,
they're nice. Good company, man. It's a Korean company.
Now, how much was the one that does the video playback? How much did you say that was?
What was that, $350 or something?
Yeah,
that's the one you with 30 gigs of drive space.
I rented a truck. What's that?
That has 30 gigs of drive space, though, right?
Yeah.
Really
cool.
That's not bad. Then,
I had to drive a 26-foot rental truck across the country. Driving 10 hours a day. I needed some entertainment to keep me alert.
Well, I hope you weren't watching the video while you were driving.
Porn.
What's that?
I hope you weren't watching the video while you were driving.
No. It was just playing the music. In 2003, I worked at this company where we were developing home automation stuff, and there's this, I have this PowerFile DVD jukebox. It's a 200 carousel DVD burner jukebox that has two drives in it, and it only has a FireWire interface. No other interfaces in it. And so I ripped my whole 500 CD collection to Og Forbis. You know, you just load it up and let her rip.
Yeah.
It's great.
So my concern is my track record with portable audio devices has not been really good.
You're a brute, Dan.
I'm a brute. Yeah. Well, you know, I use these things when I go running, so you know, they're really. I'm looking at like 6 to 8 months that these things are lasting for me, and really, that's a lot of $300 to shell out. Stop farting on them.
Have they been hard drive based?
I've had the iPod. I think it was a second generation, which was hard drive based. That started going wonky about four or five months after I had it. Now the iRiver is flash based, and again, like I say, it plays perfectly. The only problem is the play button, you know, and that's the button that turns the damn thing on and off too. So you're sitting there, you know, I'm just waiting. It's probably going to be another month or so, and then it's going to be totally, you know, almost impossible to turn on. Makes me cry.
It doesn't play Og.
What doesn't play Og?
The iRiver.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah. They just only play like one specific kind of Og.
Super high codecs, right? High bit rate.
High bit rate.
Not very conducive to podcasts. Yeah.
What other comments do you have there, Dan?
Okay, well, so some other recent discussions have been about voice over IP. And since I've moved into this new house, we do not have a landline. We've been just using our mobile phones. And but I want to get some kind of a voice over IP thing. And I think two episodes back, Patrick mentioned Broad Voice.
Right, yes. That's what we use here.
And yeah. And so I went to Broad Voice to check it out and its rate plans. And they have this really cool new deal where you can get a Wi-Fi VoIP phone. Have you seen these things? For $100.
That's cheap.
And that gets you signed up with them. And you get this Wi-Fi based VoIP phone. So
it's
your
just
phone
like a regular cordless phone,
Wi-Fi.
Right?
Yeah. Indeed. And it connects to your, you know, Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah, last week we were talking to John Gorzin, who's a Debian guy, and he's got a whole setup in his house using an Asterisk server and a bunch of Sephora phones.
Yeah, I looked into Asterisk a little bit. I had a little exposure to it with the company that I worked with in 2003. I guess I don't really have a need for it, you know, so... I don't need that many.
You don't need that headache.
Features. you guys put it to good use, you know, for your show, right?
So. Yeah, until we burn up all our minutes and Pat gets pissed off.
Burn up all our minutes and we burn up all our bandwidth
the cheapest rate plan with Broad Voice, which is like the $5.95 plan, and you only get an hour of call out time to a landline.
Oh, it's only $5.95. I thought we were paying $20 a month for that.
$20 would give us unlimited.
Yeah, I'm looking at the $10 a month unlimited plan. Unlimited, at least in the U.S.
Yeah, the $20 one gives you unlimited, like in Europe too, Australia.
See, if we had the unlimited, we could do all that extra testing. I can call Link all night.
Yeah, if you want to.
Dum, 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 dum. Oh, what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, but VoIP stuff is pretty exciting stuff. It's a growing field, you know. There's a lot of opportunities in that area for people to get into.
So you just have like cable service there? Is that how you're getting your internet?
Yeah. I'm using Comcast for cable.
Now, are you worried about
getting high def stuff?
Are you worried about not having great phone service? Like if you're getting, you know what I mean? If your internet over cable is just getting slammed or something like that, what's going to happen? How bad do you think your phone service is going to degrade, you know?
Well, I don't know.
See, that's the thing.
This is a new service for me.
Right.
So far, it's been really good. As far as uptime, it's and bandwidth goes.
Mm-hmm.
The other night, I was downloading something, and it was getting like 4,000 kilobytes per second.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "Holy shit!"
Pretty good.
That's
but anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm moving pretty soon too, and I, you know, I had that thought had crossed my mind, right? Like, get fast, try and get some fast cable internet mm-hmm. service, and just like ditch the whole POTS line thing altogether, and you know, get some like Broad Voice or something like that, and do my calls that way. The only problem is that as a computer geek, like most people, they would never even notice. You know what I mean? But computer geeks tend to do stuff like, you know, download multiple ISO images and BitTorrent files of stuff, and like, how do you know?
Yeah.
How does your phone service suffer then when you're just jamming the shit out of your
internet quality of service things in there? But you know, it would help to have quality of service aspects, so I could dedicate a certain amount of bandwidth to the phone. But I don't know. We use the mobile phones more often than not now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, a year ago I didn't even have a mobile phone because I was cut down on expenses so much. But now I have it again since last December.
You missed the money bags now.
Anytime in my old house when the phone would ring, the regular landline, I'd be like, I don't want to have to walk 50 feet to go get that damn phone. Call me on my personal phone. I don't even know if that calls for me or not, you know.
Right.
Call me on my personal mobile phone. So I've become, because of the new company that I work for, I've become a much bigger fan of mobile technologies now. So
less frugal.
Do you really think people are going to watch video on their phones?
He's already doing it.
Well, here's the deal. I wasn't going to... I had a lot of trouble in 2002 and 2003 with interruptions in income. And I worked for enough startups to be burned and disappointed. So I went to this company, Mobi TV, but I really checked them out first. And one of the things that sold me was we already have customers who are paying $10 a month. And right now we have... And this is a public information now. Usually a lot of companies don't release, you know, information upon like this. But we have 500,000 subscribers at $10 a month. Plus, we sell some technology to some other companies. Like we provide the technology for Sprint TV, and we provide we OEM out this smart proxy server to Siemens. It's called Siemens Mobile Smart Proxy. And millions of people in China are using it. So we're doing very good financially now. And, you know, we have a lot of viewers. Recently, it became available for Trio 650. And so that's really has created a lot of hype. Sprint TV, when you talk about live TV, it's running at about 5 frames per second, and that's at 42 kilobits per second. And so this is like dial-up video. But right now, the thing that I'm working on for the company is streaming H.264 over 3G networks. And this is running at 15 frames per second at about 115 kilobits per second data rate, and it is quite nice. As far as why would you watch a video on your phone, well, think about all the times that you're just sitting around waiting in your life, like at doctor's offices, on the John, in traffic, at a traffic jam because there's an accident, or, you know. There's lots of downtime.
The traffic part is what worries me.
Was accidents.
It's not. You're not supposed to worry while you're driving. Only when there's stopped traffic.
Oh, yeah, but it's not going to work that way. There are too many idiots on the highway.
But I'm really waiting for the time. You know, well, one of the things that I find interesting is the ability to do mobile video blogging. So I can capture video on my phone and then post it on my web. And I also have a means that I can download. I do this right now. I download videos through RSS feeds every night and conform them into the format that will play on my phone, my Sprint phones, and I can view the video blogs that way every day. So it'll be interesting as this develops and it becomes a lot more two-way, I think. And in the near future, you'll be seeing video conferencing. And who knows where it'll go. We talked to, you were earlier talking about the Bluetooth stuff in ear Bluetooth headsets, right?
Right.
Well, what if there was a way to do video heads-up displays through contact lenses wirelessly to your... Anyways, that's getting a little bit far out.
Yeah, and then I'm walking down the street and it pops up and I get distracted and wander in the traffic and get killed.
That's where you got to draw the line. No advertising.
I don't know about contact lenses, but I bet you it won't be very damn long before they have a pair of sunglasses or something like that that does that.
Well,
let's
just talk about beaming the image right
in your
head.
Yeah, there are sunglasses.
They have them. If you go into Singular, they have these sunglasses with the integrated Bluetooth headset.
With a video feed. You know, a heads-up display inside the sunglasses?
Yeah, there are video glasses. Yeah, there are video glasses that already work. But all the ones that I think that I know of, they just take regular, like, NTSC analog inputs.
Dude, I need to have
so
one of those.
There's been only some
I don't believe you. Send one here. Prove it.
One of the video glasses.
Yeah, send it right here.
The CEO of our company holds
reviews
on micro displays, including what is it called? Silicon displays, and so he knows some more about this. I think what's coming down the pike.
Well, if you can get a hold of him, tell him I said it's all a lie. And I'm going to keep saying that until they send me some to see for myself.
Link is he's looking to get some free shit.
That's right. I'm looking to get free shit. Why not?
And it'll only work with Windows when you get it, too.
Yeah, right. That's right.
May have, probably.
Well, then it doesn't work, right? It only works with Windows. I don't know.
Do you have anything else you wanted to comment on?
Nah, I need to let you guys talk some more.
Dan, it's a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking
to you. I really appreciate you taking the time out to come talk to us.
It's really cool. You got to come back and you let us talk to you again sometime.
What is the format that your Sprint phone takes, the video format?
Okay, right now over the existing what they call 2.5G network, also known as 1X RTT CDMA, that is MPEG-4 video with MPEG-4 AAC audio. And then the new stuff that I'm working on is using the H.264, otherwise known as AVC video codec.
That's high definition.
Are you familiar with this one?
This is Apple's high definition codec.
Right.
Well, high definition is more what is the resolution that you're using. But it's a more advanced visual codec, even more advanced than AUG Theora. And Apple is a real big promoter of it. And we have some handsets now. They're unreleased handsets that have H.264 decoders in silicon, and so it's really sweet.
Now, when you say you,
there's a really good.
Sorry,
let me continue on with H.264 for people who want to check that out. There are, you know, FFmpeg has a native H.264 decoder. And the Videoland.org project has a sub-project called X264, which is a really good implementation of H.264. And that can be compiled into MPlayer and FFmpeg. So we use a lot of open source tools at Mobi TV, including DVGrab and FFmpeg. But we're using something from Main Concept, the new... H.264 codec from them.
So that means your videos you produce won't be able to run under Linux?
Oh, yeah, they are.
Oh, okay.
To some degree, now the phones require the audio to be muxed into this format called LATM, which stands for Low Overhead Audio Transport Muxing, and that's one of the contributions we have back to the open source community was to the GPAC project. So you could take an MP4 file, which is a derivative of QuickTime Move, right? And you have to, if you want to serve that over RTSP with Darwin Streaming Server from Apple, then you have to add what's called a hint track to it. And these phones require that the AAC has this certain type of AAC muxing with this hinting. And so we contributed that back to the GPAC project. In fact, there's an export script from Kino that I made. If you have all the right binaries installed, then from within Kino, I can export a video and put it into my Darwin Streaming Server directory where the videos are stored, and I can play it right away on the phone. Now, the Linux-based multimedia players are not very good at handling this variant of AAC, unfortunately. So I should probably do a little work on supporting that, supporting this, what's called AAC-LATM.
Okay. Now, when you say you can...
Okay. Now, there's another... in addition to the AAC, there's some additional evolutions on that called AAC Plus and AAC Plus version 2. And you can get into 48 kilobits per second on AAC Plus version 2, equivalent to like 128K MP3. And so that's really interesting and exciting. It would be really cool if iPods supported that variant of AAC, because then you could double the capacity of your iPod. But instead, they're focusing on these color displays that don't play video.
It's all about the bling.
No, I'm saying, I'm saying it's weird. You know, they have these. They just came out with the Nano, and it has a color display, but it does not play video, you know. The iAudio device is awesome. It plays video.
You got to give them more time to milk their customer base before they bring out the video stuff.
Yeah, this stuff's too far out for most people, I think. So.
Yeah.
Just wait. Right. Just wait.
It's cutting edge.
When another couple of months when all the audio people who bought the iPods have started falling apart, then they'll release the video one. No, they'll release another round of audio ones, and then after that, like a month later, they'll release the video one.
Video one, yep.
Then everybody will have to go back and buy a new video one.
They'll release the video one shortly after I buy the audio one.
That's it.
About 2 weeks.
Oh, look, Alan bought his. Wait another week. Wait. Now.
Yeah. Now the video one, yeah.
What is the script you're using to convert it to the, what is it, the iAudio format? What do you use to convert the video? And
so I use MNCoder to read in the file, and then I use some filters within MNCoder to constrain the size of it to like one. Let's see, for the iAudio, it is 176 by 128, and it does it in a way that it maintains the aspect ratio and then pads it out with black because it expects that certain size, and then it writes it out as an lossless compressed AVI. So the audio track is uncompressed. The video track is using something called the FFV1 codec, which is from FFmpeg, and it's lossless video codec. And then I read that in with FFmpeg and write it out as... an MPEG 4 AVI. At least that's what I do for the phone format. Actually, because the phone requires a QuickTime-based format, I do that. But MNCoder can go directly to AVI. So for the iAudio, I just use MNCoder. So sorry if that confused you.
No, I understand completely.
MNCoder is really cool But it's pretty limited on its output formats. It really only does AVI and MPEG-2 program streams, as far as I know. And so if you want to convert that to something else, like a QuickTime-based format or thing like MPEG-2 transport stream or whatever, then you want to write it out from MNCoder as either uncompressed or a lossless uncompressed, and then read that in with FFmpeg.
Now, so, I've done some work with MNCoder and Transcode and all these, and you're talking about all these the video and audio codecs. In your opinion, what is the best distribution to be running to play around with this stuff? Because just about every distribution I have used, there's always been problems. Like Ubuntu, I like have problems
Arch.
Because there's no audio, or I have to go to special repositories.
If you're on an Intel 686 class machine, then I would use Arch, and the reason is because the packages stay up to date very much. The packet manager is really good, and they're not ashamed to include things that have patent royalties attached to them.
They're not software Nazis.
So
licenses be damned.
So they include
right?
full versions of MJPEG tools and full versions. They even have a package for the Win32 codecs and stuff like that. So outside of that, then the next thing maybe is, well, let's see, maybe Fedora Core or Debian Unstable with the Christian Merilot repository.
Canonix. That's basically
where
what
he maintains the multimedia packages. I'm sorry?
Basically, Canonix is like that. It's unstable, but a whole bunch of applications are all ready to go.
Yep. I downloaded and burned Canonix, and I checked it out for a little bit, but
Canonix.
I haven't done anything with it. So.
Yeah, it's a nice bootable distro, but it's pretty good once you install it as well.
Yeah.
I'll have to check out Arch, though. That sounds interesting.
I've been very happy with it.
On that,
I used to do rolling upgrades on Debian Unstable, and around the time that GTK2 was being released, I got burned quite a bit, and I was like, I want to spend more time coding and working on Kino and not so much time butting with the system. And so I switched to Mandrake. Now, then I just, for some reason, checked out this Arch and was happy with it. And I've been doing rolling upgrades, through very GNOME versions and KDE versions without hardly nary a problem.
Does that compile like Gentoo from scratch or no?
No. They provide i686 binary-only packages. You can get the source as well, but it's to some people they describe it as like it has some of the the speed advantages of Gentoo, but you're not having to compile from source because all the binaries are i686 optimized and stripped and stuff like that, and so it's been working great. Me.
I have to check it out.
What was that repository you had mentioned for Debian?
It's the Merilot.
Okay,
Merilot.
Yeah.
It's
I have that.
Site out of France.
Yeah, it does all the Debian.
Yeah, you want to get your multimedia packages from there. This is a thing that really confuses end users. It's something like MJPEG tools. A lot of distributions distribute it in a bastardized form, so it doesn't have the MPEG encoders. It has like all the tools in it except for the MPEG encoders, and then people are posting, I can't export this MPEG from Kino, It's because MPEG 2 encode is not in their path, because the package didn't install it. So you have to instruct them, your distro doesn't include that, so you want to go to this other site and install it. And those are some things that are holding back desktop Linux, and then you have some distributions like Linspire that are trying to improve upon that by paying for some of the licenses and including those things.
All right, we got to actually wrap it up here because Link wants to go home.
Yeah, it's 10:30 by us. So.
Yeah.
10:30, I got to get up at 6.
I got up at 4.
I was just saying, man, 4:30. So.
4:30.
Jeez.
I want to thank you for coming on, Dan.
Yeah, it was great hearing from you, Dan.
Yeah, so we're definitely, we'll have you come back on again in the very near future to talk more about the other projects and how much they've progressed.
Okay, cool.
And how we can get our porn business off the ground with Kino.
Let me ask you something. Is it wrong to surf your stepson's browser cache for internet porn?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, he found it all already. Why go through all that trouble?
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, have a good one. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
All right, everybody. That was Dan Dennehy. And this is, or was, in fact, episode 103 of the Linux Link Tech Show. That's 107 weeks we've been doing this. Long time.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Long time.
Just a quick thing. I know a lot of people have been asking about donating or donations to the show.
Oh, yes.
Look at Pat with his hand out again.
I have a really good idea about that, but I'll let you talk first.
I was just going to say we are looking into the issues. I think we mentioned that before. But let's hear Link's really good idea.
Well, let's leave it as we're listening. We're looking into the issues. After we wrap it up here, I'll have a quick discussion with Dan downstairs. And perhaps he can post something to the forum in reply to that discussion if he agrees. But be looking for some information very soon. And if you want to donate, we hope you will. Like I said, be looking for that information. Hopefully we'll have a way for you to do that.
CDs, DVDs?
Yes. And we need to do the... did
money,
you guys
money,
take
money,
care
money,
of the other guys who wanted the CDs and DVDs? Are they already taken care of?
We didn't do a damn thing for nobody.
Jeez. Well, here you go. See, it's Link asking about it, even though I was gone for a week, and Pat's over there sitting on his ass. There he is.
I did plenty of things, my friend.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know what we were gonna do with that. I didn't know. I downloaded all the more issues 1 through episodes 1 through 50.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was.
You don't have the disc anymore?
54. Huh?
You gave me the CD when I was doing the archive, the index.
Yeah, I don't know whatever happened to those discs. They got stepped on, the dog crapped on it or something. But, you know, I was just thinking, all these other shows are putting advertisements on themselves, you know, advertisements, crap like that, and order asking for donations, and they get the handout with the donation button. We don't do any of this stuff, and people just want to send us money. So, want to send us donations. So, we do appreciate that.
We're not rich at all.
Yeah, we're not going to... We don't want to sound like we're, you know, we got our hands out. We're not saying you need to send us donations. But, hey, if you want to, we should accept it.
Yeah, we should. And we would definitely appreciate it, too, because, like Pat said, none of us are rich, so...
Except Alan.
And, you know, all this...
He's not really.
He's rich in the love of Tim McGraw.
That's right.
Got all his concerts, Tim McGraw.
Not me. Don't associate me with that, please.
You don't sound sick, Alan. I think you're just playing hook. I didn't want to get in my car and drive.
Man. Go to bed.
No, I'm not playing hooky.
Sure.
I just don't want to infect you guys.
Thank you.
He's over there fondling his Tim McGraw, his Tim McGraw cardboard cutout.
Not me, no.
Oh. I love it when you wear your cardboard cowboy hat on the side, cardboard Tim McGraw.
Alan, why is his crotch all rubbed out?
All right, listen, everybody. Thanks again for listening to us on 103. Please tune in next week. Catch us on episode 104.
Yeah,
same bad channel.
at the Linux Link Tech Show.
See you bad time. Have a happy one, Alan. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I hope you get better, man. Sorry to hear about your cat.
Yep, thank you.
Anything you want to say, Alan, before we close off?
No, I'm good to go.
All right. Well,
good night, everybody.
Thank you, Alan.
Good night. Mm-hmm.
Good night.
Right, bye-bye.
Good night.
And I'll play some music out of here.
Yeah.
Everybody enjoy the rest of September. Because here comes October.
Here comes.
Food. Food. I have not eaten for days.
And who says you will?
Give me food so I have strength when the wolves come. Let me die not in hunger, but in combat.
Who are you?
I am Subutai, thief and archer. I am Hakeni, the great order of Curlet.
So what are you doing here?
Yeah. Dinner for wolf.
Dinner for wolf.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.